Well, hello there. Welcome to the Expressive Mom Show. Miriam Slosberg here, and it's so wonderful to have you along. And today, we're going to be talking about how to deal with the day-to-day stuff and responsibilities when you are parenting a child with special needs, because I have today my guest. Her name is Lori Wallen. She is a coach and an author, and she had written a really, really wonderful book called Get Your Joy Back, Banishing Resentment and Reclaiming Confidence in Your Special Needs Family. Because the fact of the matter is that one out of every four families in the U.S. has a child with special needs, and parenting is very, very hard as it is. Parenting typical kids is difficult. And you know what? When a child has special needs, there's added stress. So what Lori talks about in her book, she just talks about how she just strives every day to live out her message for families that no matter the challenge, if you have faith, you can have the joy and confidence that you can get no matter what is happening in your life. Now, Get Your Joy Back is full of biblical insights and practical strategies to help parents recognize and shed the resentments that leave them spiritually, emotionally, and socially drained. And Wallen sugarcoats nothing but addresses issues with honesty, humor, and above all, hope. And I also want to bring out this book is Christian-based, but you know what? You don't have to be Christian to find value in this book. You know what? You just have to have faith. You've got to believe in something because it's really wonderful. So I'd love to take this opportunity to welcome Lori Wallen. Hello, Lori.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being on the show. So I've got a few questions to ask. You know, and one thing I must ask you is that Get Your Joy Back comes from a very personal place for you. Could you tell us about your family?
Yeah, we have my husband and I have been married 16 years, and about 11 years ago almost, we began our parenting journey by adopting two sisters from our local foster care organization, mm-hmm. and they came home with us, and we basically kind of got to be parents of twins. They're only 11 months apart, and so we were juggling a lot at first, and they had quite a few things going on with them, but we assumed that it was all related to the neglect and the uprooting that they'd gone through and all the homes that they'd been in. So we parented according to what we'd read and what we'd been trained to do in classes we took, and that was starting to seem like it was going to go okay. And we added to our family with two more biological daughters, and so we have now four girls. My husband makes the joke that we are almost to a basketball team. And he's 6'7", so that's pertinent to him.
Okay.
But really, we saw early on that our older two girls were going to be different than we expected. And so we then were on the track of trying to find the help that they needed, find out what's in the normal scope of things, what's not, and how do we have our family be, in essence, what we'd always dreamed for a family, even if in practice it looked a lot different than we expected.
Well, you know, you bring up a very important point because you said that you knew that things were going to be different. Acceptance is extremely, it's important. Like, it's important to really, really, you know, that actually cuts the stress a lot because I have a child with pretty severe ADHD and mild autism. And, you know, we all have our, it's difficult, but you have to accept what you're dealing with and you have to accept what is and what will be, you know, plan for their future. And, you know, you don't want to be pessimistic by any means. You want to be optimistic, but you also have to be realistic about what, you know, they'll likely achieve and what they won't achieve. You know, you have to accept their limits, right? So, you know, so
you do,
I think
the big thing in terms of accepting limits, I think that even shortchanges us because to accept the limits means that we're focusing on those, but
true.
We can move into the next piece where we see the assets really where the joy comes. And it's hard in practice every day, and it takes a lot of courage and a lot of willingness to step out of the moment, you know, and
mm-hmm.
see them as a 30-year-old person, you know, down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I meant by accepting limits, you just have to accept what is, basically. You know what is likely going to be. And, I mean, when you do that, it actually does, I feel, it removes a lot of the stress because you're not wondering, oh, what's going to be, right? So,
yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So now I'm going to ask, what makes Get Your Joy Back stand apart from other books written to special needs parents?
I think it's one of the few, if maybe the only, that's out there not to help a parent be better equipped to deal with the types of issues their child faces. There's a lot of very good books that are out on the market for that, and people need to have skills specific to what their kids need. And so those are a certain class of books, but this particular one is for the parent as an individual, apart from their role as a parent. It's kind of how do you be you again? Are you even still in there? And the answer is yes. There are great things for each of our lives, and some of those will come out in the context of parenting, but some of them, and we all know this, and we push it down because it's not convenient and we don't feel like we have the time or resources for it, but there is a calling on each of our lives that's independent of our role as a caregiver. And
mm-hmm.
the book is really about letting people have some space to listen to that again and seeing some very practical ways to take care of themselves. A lot of the books for parents are talking about how to take better care of your child. And
they'll mention
you in passing as a parent. And by the way, have some self-care. And it's like, which means what?
Well, it's true because you know what? When you are parenting, regardless of whether you have a child with special needs or not, your needs are on the back burner. But that's the thing. You have to make sure that they're met, or else what are you going to give if your needs aren't met at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll be depleted. You won't be able to give anything. So it's very important that you do find a way to nurture your own needs. So that's very important.
And it really, and it's, you know, there's also a lot of good books out there in terms of physical wellness and you know, things about finding spiritual white space, so to speak, where you can find, you know, be able to be mindful or learn how to meditate and all this kind of stuff. And what this one does is it actually goes at it from, you know, you can't put anything into a box that's already full. And we carry with us as parents so much burden and stress. You know, researchers, they study us, parents of kids with special needs, when they want to look at the combination of acute and chronic stress in one body. And they
mm-hmm.
see that we are aging. We're aging 6 years to one over what we would have been in less stressful situations that are not 24/7, 365, you know. And
mm-hmm.
so my heart was, you know, yeah, you could pick up a wellness book too, but if you've got a lot of resentment, if we are carrying anger and isolation and disappointment and bitterness and guilt and all of the negative stuff inside us, there's not space to eat healthier and exercise better, you know. So it's kind of a house cleaning book. It's kind of a truth teller and a place where people can heal before they build up those good things.
Yeah, because it is very easy to build those negative feelings up, and it is true. You do have to acknowledge it and find a way to get rid of it because you're just hurting yourself, and it is true. It does add a lot of problems to your health in every way, physical, mm-hmm. mental, emotional, spiritual. It just really, really, that's a big burden, you know? That's a huge burden, so that's very, very true. So I'm going to ask, what did you mean when you said in this book that it will help parents stop the madness?
I think that really what we were just talking about, the madness being, I wish my life was better. I wish I had a
mm-hmm.
life. I wish that I was, you know, I wish I recognized myself in the mirror still instead of looking at someone who looks too old and maybe too healthy and maybe too unhealthy and maybe too angry, you know.
Right.
It's that that I'm alone, I'm doing this all myself, people don't understand, I'm having to fight the system, I, you know, and it just cycles and cycles and cycles into this, it just flushes us down a toilet, you know, and so
yeah.
We, really the idea is like, stop, breathe, let's get a plan going forward here, you know, and you're not alone, I'm doing this every day, you know, and I've helped a lot of parents to be able to get through their own roadblocks and find family the way they want it, you know, in heart, even if
right.
the practice of it again is different. But I'm also doing it, you know, and I think that that also makes this book a little different. I'm not an academic. I went to the School of Hard Knocks for this.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The School of Hard Knocks, for sure. So now I'm going to ask, why do you think special needs parents just often feel so isolated?
There's a couple of reasons for that that I've seen, experienced, and heard. I interviewed about 70 families for this book, and overall the isolation seems to hinge on two things. First of all, that they're just too tired to explain what's going on or to ask for a need to be met or to even notice that they have a need. We get so disoriented and shredded in our day-to-day just need a need, you know, put out a fire,
mm-hmm.
and we don't step back and we don't even know, you know, I'm sure that you've had this experience before. Someone says, hey, can I do something to help you out? And you can't even think of what they could do to get started.
Mm-hmm.
And so this gives a space for people to be able to think for a minute about that. You know, maybe there's a friend that we could call in who we could give a list to when we're not in a stressed moment, and they can be the point person for people to help us out. And that eliminates isolation because there's communication with somebody else on a level
communication.
Of...
Communication. Yeah, that's the key.
Yeah, you know? And
mm-hmm.
So there's that. There's just the sense that really, I don't know if you know anything about Abraham Maslow and his hierarchy
yep.
of needs.
Yep.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. really, as parents of kids with high needs, we live in the bottom layer of that period,
mm-hmm.
that pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to form a friendship, to have social bonds, to be able to connect with people on meaningful levels are all in the top three levels of that. And we are really in the safety place. We're really in the, like, we have what looks a lot of times like post-traumatic stress with our kids. We're so high intensity, and that we do actually biochemically, our bodies mirror what war veterans show in their biochemistry, and so it's hard to connect with people when they're living and talking about TV shows and what they're going to wear and this, that, or the other,
right.
and your brain is like, I don't think I can cope if my kid melts down again in public. You know, they're just
mm-hmm.
different planes, and so it's hard to communicate that way. And the other part is that when they've tried, they've been shut down because
mm-hmm.
other people are afraid of the magnitude of emotion or the length of time that a parent's been struggling. You know, everybody expects someone with a newborn, typically developing child to be a complete and utter train wreck for the first 6 months of that child's
right.
life.
Right.
They don't expect me, a mother of a 13-year-old, to be a train wreck still. You know, they,
mm-hmm.
we should have found our equilibrium by now. It's not socially acceptable to still be in the same high intensity as toddler parenting for their entire lifetime, you know?
Right.
And people, there's not a paradigm for it. And so it just sort of shorts out their brain, you know, and it just makes mm-hmm. it hard for them to want to connect. And so sometimes people say things that hurt and really sabotage relationship because
yes.
they don't know what to do with this other parent's crisis level. They want to blame somebody. They want to make it make sense in a paradigm they get, and that isolates.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that parents who are in this position really are super, super sensitive to what others say. So that also is an added issue, you know.
Yeah. And they want to balance everything. You know, I was just reading on a group that I'm a part of,
mm-hmm.
A parent lamenting, you know, that someone asked what's wrong with her child, some person painting her house or something, you know, and the mom was just stymied as to what to say back because she wants to honor her child as a person, not just a disability. She doesn't think there's anything wrong. There's hard parts about her child, but, you know, what does that mean that there's something wrong with her child? And we just, like, you can just picture just the smoke coming out of ears. You know, these kind of moments.
Yeah,
the
totally.
Brain. You know,
oh.
Hi, brain.
Yeah, and, you know, you sound like you're coping extremely well based on, you sound like you're coping well, but, and I'm sure that's not what you want to hear. But the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, even though you're coping well, I'm sure you still have moments where you just aren't sure you can make it through the day. So that being said, what does get you through? What helps you get through? What helps you get through the day?
Well, a couple things, I guess. For right now, I happen to be in another upset season. We had a good working model all the way through the writing of the book, which
mm-hmm.
took me through the end of elementary school for my oldest daughter. And
mm-hmm.
we learned how to navigate IEPs. We've got two daughters who've between them got about 12 diagnoses of medical all the way to mental health and developmental level. And so we had two kids on IEPs. We did all the meetings, all the therapy, all the stuff for the two of them, but it was just the one teacher. You know, while they were in elementary, and now I've got a middle schooler and a fifth grader who's now transitional and has a couple teachers, and a middle schooler who's got seven teachers, you know, and then my younger daughters who each have one still because they're in primary grades, and now things are shifted again, you know, and so I find myself feeling very unable to handle that I'm managing whatever that is, 10, 12 teachers now between the four girls and all, you know, including then the therapists and stuff on top of it for the older two. And so it brought my marriage to a crisis point because our model up till then was workable for me to manage all of the kids. But from middle school on, it's looking like, you know, all hands on deck. And so it, you know, getting into those places where it's unfamiliar, you don't have a paradigm that works, everything's broken down and you can hear the engine grinding to a halt. Those are the kind of moments where I need to make sure I am getting enough sleep and that I am eating healthy, you know,
right.
and that I am drinking enough water and that I'm breathing and doing just a real quick check-in, a mindfulness check-in, you know, where's my tension right now? Where am I holding this? And, you know, I'm still here. My body's still here. And not to just zombie out as I'm trying to cope with all the logistics.
Right.
And the other part is to be open, you know, and be come at my spouse with an attitude of openness and non-judgmental attitude. It's not his fault that I'm suddenly drowning in this. It's
right.
that life has moved on, you know, and we're in a new phase. And now it's time for me to say, we need to split the kids in half. You know, each of us gets one with IEP and all their teachers and the other one, you know, and one typically developing kid. And,
mm-hmm.
and we're each of us is 100% responsible for the schoolwork of those two that we have instead of me with all four. And that's been hard, you know, and it's been a grieving process for my husband because he now has work to do when he gets home from work.
Right.
And,
right.
And I've been working all day, and I'm working when I get home from work, you know, and it's you know, there's fatigue, there's a lot of opportunity for us to snap at each other, and there are days
sure.
when we just do, you know, but we don't take ourselves so seriously that we can't just even stop in the middle of snapping sometimes and just be like, yeah, we've done this before, it's not going to help us out. Moving on,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's go play a board game. You know, it's like...
Yeah. I completely get that. I do. So, you know what, you had written about a life-changing moment at a conference. I'd love to know what the topic was and what was said that just pierced your heart.
It was an event, it was a women's retreat or something, and my friend was speaking on forgiveness, and
mm-hmm.
she's a fabulous speaker, and I love hearing her. So I went to support her, not because I was interested in the topic, because the topic, quite frankly, was one that I found banal. You know, like it just wasn't like my thing. I already knew what forgiveness was, and she was speaking on forgiveness, and I thought, well, I don't really need a refresher. I kind of get the gist, you know. And so I wasn't planning on going and getting anything out of it for myself, just being there for her. And
mm-hmm.
as she was talking, we had had a particularly hard season with our younger adopted daughter, and she was en route, and we didn't know it at the time, but she was, you know, making her way to a psychiatric placement. It had gotten really bad, and it was like being the frog in the pot, you know. It was cold water, and someone's been turning up the heat, and we're all boiled and dead, you know, and we just didn't realize how much we had wrapped around her, you know. So I was in a very dark place, and it was a space away from the kids, so I had time to think. And I'm sitting in her seminar, and she says the whole thing about Peter and Jesus saying, you know, you can't just forgive people seven times, you ninny. You have to do it 70 times seven, like outrageous amounts of forgiveness for you to be someone of character, you know. And I did a quick calculation in my head where I thought, you know, okay, how many times does she's got a reactive attachment disorder. So she was doing a lot of triangulating and, you know, having a tantrum at me in the morning when we were packing lunches and then lying to her teachers and the nurse and saying I wouldn't feed her and all this gamey stuff between her and a bunch of staff members, you know. And so it was very stressful. And those kinds of things, I would get 5, 6, 7 notes a day about different aspects of her running away, going MIA on campus, lying, stealing, hurting somebody, you know, all this kind of stuff was going on. And I thought, okay, you know, we kind of get to that 490 number every couple weeks in this life that we're living. And so is that a joke? You know, the bitterness just really caught me off guard at that point because I thought, yeah, it's not going to work because if I'm going to go ahead and do this, that really hurt and that was humiliating and that really made me feel bad as a parent and now I have to rebuild this rapport with this teacher and all this kind of stuff, but I forgive my daughter for this. If I was going through that basic setup of forgiveness, I wouldn't have any space in my day or brain to think anything else. And so it made me like look straight on because my faith is in God and I had him to scream at that point because it's kind of like I can't scream at my daughter. She's clearly off base, you know. And so I just turned my weight toward him and I was like, what gives? You know, you're either a jerk because really, I mean, you knew that my kid was going to come along sometime in history and then 490 is pathetic. You know, like you need to tell me how I can do this and not be a mess all the time. And so then I got really honest with myself and what was really starting to build up and the ways that I needed to vent that toxicity, you know, out of me. In different ways, you know, and it came down to forgiveness looking really different for somebody who's in a war zone. It looks more like forgiveness, like F-O-R-E, forgiveness, where you decide, you know that there will be a lot of hard behaviors or a lot of hard needs that are come up during the day. You know it in advance. You don't know what they'll be, but you know they'll be there, and you decide before your feet hit the floor in the morning that you're not going to let it stick. And that you will choose how you behave and respond and feel about it. And it just rocks my whole paradigm.
Right. I can only imagine. We've got a few minutes left, but I do want to ask a couple more questions. And now that we're on the topic of forgiveness, I noticed that in the book, you talk about forgiving your child. Now, have you found that idea to be controversial in any way?
Oh, yeah. It's very hard. I've felt bad about having to be in a place where I need to admit that I need to forgive my child. There's this internal tug of war. They're young. They didn't ask for this.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it on purpose, or maybe they are, but who cares? They're seven. You know, it's
right.
I'm a grown-up, and you're small, and you don't know what I know, so it's not fair to hold you to my standards. And so there's this internal... You know, someone says, oh, I can't even imagine raising your child. You're so amazing. And you're thinking, yeah, actually, I kind of wanted to punch her in the face. Like, so I don't know that I'm that amazing, you know. It's like just you get to these places where it just, we have to let ourselves be honest about how we feel about our kids. Because just because we have intense feelings about them doesn't mean that's who we are about them. And we get so scared to walk into the dark that we'll keep running for the sunset, you know, our whole lives. And what we really need to do is be okay in the dark for a minute so that the light can really come.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that really does, you know what, you said it well. So I want to also mention that I know that you interviewed more than 70 families when writing Get Your Joy Back. So I want to ask, what was the most common theme you heard while talking to them?
I heard misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely that. And that came across, you know, the result of being misunderstood by peers was isolation. The result of being misunderstood at church was feeling condemned and feeling judgment. Mm-hmm. The result of being misunderstood by their families of origin, extended families and friends and neighbors and stuff is, you know, rejection. And
right.
And then so the root cause of all of the hurt that built up in these different areas was this misunderstood sense. And, you know, and then especially with professionals feeling like this confusion inside of, you know, I'm protective of my kid and I want the best for my child and I've fought for 6 months to get this appointment with this great specialist and I need them to see the intensity of our problem and I need them to take me seriously and my child seriously. And yet I need to come across as pleasant, fun, and affable, someone you'd want to go on a speed date with, you know, and all of these things, like, so you don't act too mama bear or too, you know, and it's this whole tug of war, and there's this constant sense that the professionals don't get us, you know, or that they write us off because we let our feelings show during a meeting.
Right, right. Oh, I do get that. I really,
yeah.
I do. I can certainly relate to everything you just said. All right, and finally, Lori, how can people reach you and where can they purchase Get Your Joy Back?
They can reach me at my website, loriwallin.com, and mm-hmm. on there's information about life coaching that I do with parents, you know, in these kind of situations. I kind of would consider myself a bounce back coach, so I don't only work with parents, but I also work through loss and new job and divorce and that kind of stuff.
Okay, great.
That's there on the site, and then the book information is also there in the book trailer.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Lori. That was very insightful, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to have written such a great, insightful, valuable book because so many parents can really, really benefit from it. So thank you, Lori, and have a great weekend and have a great upcoming week, and take care. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.